No, we don't.
Give me your A-ball.
No, actually,
Sidwell Friends Endowment.
I want them to know, if you're calling me to raise money on behalf of any educational institution that I attended, I'm going to pick up and then hang up immediately. That is not an invitation to send follow-up emails. It's not.
Fundraising for school is outrageous. Like, all the schools that my wife went to, kids go to, all the schools that I've gone to, we have a whole trash can for all the fundraising.
You don't give to the Terp stuff?
We do give to the Terp, sadly. We give to the school that my kids are currently in, sadly. We give, I put it in the trash can, but then my wife writes a check, is how it works.
Funding those games against Minnesota and Northwestern that everybody wants to see?
Oh, yeah. Terps. I mean, at least when we were in the ACC, we could go south for the fall and watch a game. Now I got to go to the Midwest to watch them play. Don't nobody want to go to Minnesota in October? I'm good.
The Big Ten could expand and bring in FIU, UCF. That could be next. They brought in Rutgers.
Oh, yeah.
They've lowered the bar. I don't know if you noticed.
We don't give to the athletic program. We both were arts and humanity majors, so that's where the money goes. We've never given a dollar to the athletic program, so I'm a bad football Terp.
You're part of the problem.
You could convince me at this point that FIU was in the Big Ten. I have no idea what's in any conference. Is this what they mean by "This is March"? Discover what conference your favorite college is in suddenly, because none of it makes sense anymore.
When is the Ivy League expanding?
What is the Ivy League?
Ivy League is gonna become the first conference to contract, actually. They want to prove the point. You all care about sports way too much. That's like us. We resent the fact that sports exists. Oh, and by the way, speaking of resenting that sports exists, welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where we debate nothing.
Shout out Tommy Amaker.
Shout out Tommy Amaker.
Blue Devil.
Who got that job stolen from Coach K by Coach K. Incidentally, which is weird. Alabaster, where are we starting today's show?
Before we start with the sports, I am going to beg you again to tweet the show so you have people watch your non-debates.
Very good.
So
oh,
beggy.
And that is,
don't be so beggy, Alabaster. It's just like the fundraisers, the emails that I get. It's like, I mean, if you save some money on these fancy emails, maybe you wouldn't have to ask for more money. Jeez. As expensive emails are.
Oh Lord! All right,
I did.
I've tweeted.
I did too. I just
Dominic Foxworth has tweeted. Kevin Clark is making gestures.
I'm trying
to
tweet.
A blazer.
I'm trying to tweet.
Like he's on.
Do you have on tweet?
Institutional.
Are you tweeting and tweet right
it,
now?
I got it. I'm in the East River. It's hard. We don't get much service here.
Right. There. Kevin Clark is floating
Shout
along
out,
the East River.
I got it. Mm. I did it.
Well, all right.
Landed the plane.
Can we get a topic
nice,
now,
Nice
please,
jump pass there, Pablo. Yeah, first topic. Who had the best performance this weekend? LeBron, Tatum, or Jokic?
So these are three truly absurd performances, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm going to remember one of these like 5 years from now, and that one is LeBron James. I understand that Nikola Jokic is doing everything a human can do to not be forgotten, Kevin Clark. But I'm going to remember the fact that no one has ever had 55 and 10 this old, and he did it against the Warriors in a season in which, as he said it after the game, it is motivated by desperation, which is the truly honest thing that I think LeBron can actually defend in public. A lot of statements from him, a lot of leaks, but motivated by a desperation that feels like a guy trying to constantly figure out where in my obituary is this performance going to go. I think he does that better than anybody, more than anybody else in sports. I think 56, 10, and 3 at age 37 is what I'm going to personally remember in the future, let alone the present.
Motivated by desperation, figuring out where in the obituary this performance goes. What's in between LeBron and this show, the three panelists on this show? Just desperate for anything, any spark, saddled with
Please
losers.
Tweet.
Yeah, so... I wanna say a couple things.
Number time. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I thought you were looking down at your number pad. I love
not
number
yet,
time.
Not yet. Not yet. Let me tell you
number time with KC. Oh.
Pablo and I were at Sloan Sports Analytics Conference over the weekend.
Where number it was boys. Number time all
we
the time.
We had a wonderful time. And I thought, you know, when we were moderating our panels, Pablo, you did a great job. I was thinking, it's
likewise.
So great to talk about analytics without Dominique saying numbers time all the time. So. And in fact, I'm surprised. Sounds like you had a good weekend, but I'm surprised you didn't show up just to be in the back to say, oh, here we go with the stats again.
Get him, nerd.
Interrupting Daryl Morey.
So
to tell you about Raptor.
I appreciate your stats. That's why I yell number time, because I want people to focus. Because sometimes when you just hear people rattle off numbers, it's droning and boring. People go to sleep. If you have someone who is an entertainer like myself yelling number time in the air, they wake up and they get excited about these stats. Stat them down. Stat me down.
I'm not going to stat them down yet. I've got a preface, which is that on the show last week, which is on YouTube now, just like this show, LeBron said that it pisses him off that he's not in the greatest scorer of all time conversation. That when they talk about great scorers, there's a lack of respect for LeBron James. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about. Like, I don't know who's having these conversations. I don't know who's sitting around saying this is the greatest scorer of all time and then purposely excluding LeBron James. Fine. So I think what's happening now, by the way, I don't even know who's in that conversation. I don't know who, what
yeah, conversation. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, maybe Alabaster's going to say what I'm going to say. Get him, Allie.
Wants in on the conversation.
Sorry, I just want to be very clear. I know exactly who's having the conversation. It happened about 20 minutes before the show. It was first take. It was Stephen A. and Kendrick Perkins are actually having the conversation.
Let's remind everybody here, I don't work here, so I can say whatever I want. All right, so LeBron is motivated now purely by that. My boss, Bill Simmons, said earlier today on the podcast that he thought that there's almost a Karl Malone type thing where LeBron just wants to score a bunch of points because he wants to. Not that kind of Karl Malone thing.
Sheesh, I got nervous.
His hunting interests are very much in the basketball.
As he reaches the end of his career, he wants to score a lot of points because he wants to be the best scorer of all time from a points basis, allegedly, not just in the first take realm. For me, the answer is Jason Tatum, because he's the only person who's telling me something I didn't know. We knew LeBron was historically dominant. We know what's going on in Denver. That's well established. Jason Tatum is the only guy who's teaching us something that 2 months ago I didn't think I knew. They have the best record in the NBA since January 31st. They have the best point differential. Per 100 possessions, stat me down, they outscore opponents by 17 points
numbers
per 100 possessions when Jason Tatum is on the floor. This is a superstar developing before our eyes. That's why, for me, it's most impressive, because I didn't think it was possible.
So I think you're right. I agree, Jason Tatum. So Jokic, you said at the beginning, Pablo, that he's doing everything he can to get people to pay attention to him. Everything except jumping. Like, I'm going to need you to jump every now and then, just explode off the ground, do something. Like, his passes, phenomenal, interesting, impressive. His ability to score at that size and at that speed is also impressive, but it's not memorable. Like, the passes, some of them are memorable, but his game is not something that is going to, like, wow you in a Ja Morant type of way. I think what the point that Kevin is making is one that is important to me, because they're the only team of these 350 point scorers that I think has a chance. So like, LeBron's desperation, it's desperation. And as someone who is looking down the barrel of maybe my third midlife crisis, I can understand where LeBron James is coming from, and just every now and then wanting to show him that you still got it. Like, I might put on some fancy clothes and go out late at night just because I want somebody to look at me and let me know I still got it. That's what LeBron did. LeBron showed us some leg and wanted us to pay attention. And to your point about him being considered one of the best scorers, if he is one of the best scorers, I get where he's coming from. He's not talked about like that. He's talked about as one of the greatest players. I'm making the point that maybe he's wrong to be chasing that. But I remember a couple years ago when the conversation was like, is James Harden the best scorer since Michael Jordan? Like, we've never talked about LeBron James as a scorer. That's because he's better than that. He is much more than just a scorer.
That's the point I was going to make. If Tom Brady hears, Tom Brady's not one of the best pure throwers of all time, is he supposed to freak out? He might, because he's a weirdo, but
exactly.
He shouldn't.
So is LeBron James. He's that same psychopathic, competitive weirdo. So if this is what's going to motivate him to give us watchable Lakers games towards the end of this season, by God, LeBron James, you can't score at all.
But this we did know about. To use Kevin's standard here, we did know that LeBron James is always, and perhaps more than anyone else, motivated by vocabulary, right? We know LeBron wants to be like every superhero in the Avengers, right? But no, we have to get Hawkeye in there. You need a guy who's most accurate. You can't get all the superlatives when you're making a yearbook page. One guy can't have every single superlative, LeBron. This is why we are divvying it up And this is why Kendrick Perkins is yelling at Stephen A. Smith. Yeah, approximately 20 minutes before we come on.
What's LeBron's like 3-point shooting percentage? Because like he turned himself in the course of his career, it feels like he turned himself from someone who they dared to shoot to someone who is like a reliable shooter with like step backs and fadeaways and all types of like that is an impressive addition to his old man game. Like Jordan put in that fadeaway in his game. So that is an impressive evolution of his game. But the idea that he cares how we respect him as a scorer to me is kind of absurd. The thing that he needs to be focused on is his ability to generally manage, because that is where we do not respect him. We do not respect his ability to generally manage a roster.
Yeah. Alabaster, you're trying to generally manage us with another interjection.
I have can I stat you down for a second, Dominique?
Ooh,
This is going off of a point you made that made me do a tiny bit of research. I know for this show.
Research.
But you said that you need Jokic to dunk a little bit. I just went through Jokic's statistics. He's never caught an alley-oop. He is 7 feet tall, and he has never caught an alley-oop in his NBA career. To your point of not having flashy
that's
dunks,
a great stat.
That's amazing.
But this is where I have to
Pablo, I'm going to need you to stop. I need you to stop. We need to let this stat wash over us right now.
I have so many questions.
We need to let it just sit here like Nikola Jokic in the paint.
My number one question is, what does he do when he gets an alley-oop thrown to him? Does he catch it and come down with it and then just like take 5 steps back?
Right. Like, cause some, like on an assist sometimes, like the home scorer will kind of let you take a couple dribbles and then shoot into it.
If there's
like,
a 2-on-1 fast break, well, I guess no breaks with Jokic are fast. Is that what we've decided?
Well, he's starting the break. This is where I got to defend him. Alabaster, it's a great stat.
No, like, no, there's no defense.
I will unfortunately remember that statistic in 5 years, I think, at this point.
There's no defense.
But the defense is that the guy starts fast breaks. The point is that the guy creates dunks. The point is that the guy scored 30 points in the fourth quarter in overtime alone.
How many years?
10 of 11 shooting.
How many years?
I mean, he was
one alley. One alley.
Oh,
God. He said 2015. You can't, like, slip and fall into an alley oop.
I mean, sometimes you need to have some flaws as a superhero, right? Like, this is his flaw.
This is like, I'm going to say something. So, this is like, all those guys who were like, if I just played a regular NBA schedule for 82 games, I'd score 4 points over the season. Like, if you've just played in the NBA for 7 years and you're above 6'5", you're going to eventually just be led to the basket, jump up, and then somehow put the ball in the basket.
So.
If you're above 6'5", it seems like an inevitability.
12, 11, 4, and 3, a stat line, Alabaster, correct me if I'm wrong, which has literally never existed before.
That's correct.
It's a great stat line.
I mean, guys,
like we need one more stat on that stat line. Alley-oop. I want that. And you want to fix the dunk contest?
You know
that's it. I want Jokic in the dunk contest. Just try to fix it.
I've actually come over to your side of the aisle. Guys, I now want the mission of Debatable to get Nikola Jokic to alley-oop dunk.
Yeah, one time. This season.
One time.
I'm fine with pregame. It doesn't even have to be an in-game alley. Just somebody throw that man a ball, and I want him to catch it and put it through the hoop without his feet touching the ground.
I just want to see the mechanics of it. I just want to see what he thinks it is.
Does three toe count?
Now you think that he doesn't even know what it is?
Is there a possibility here that guys have been throwing him alley-oops for like 5 years and he just doesn't know to go up and get it?
He's like, I don't know. That's a
high pass. Why he sailed that one?
I got to climb the ladder to catch that. Oh, man.
The city. Earlier, Kevin Clark said the phrase, we know what's going on in Denver. The people of Denver firmly disagree with that characterization.
Is this why they're not on TV? Locally?
I miss Denver.
We think it's a carriage dispute, but it's actually the Nuggets don't want anybody to see what's going on there.
I really think this should be a Nuggets campaign. Like, they're not going to win the championship this year. I don't care who comes back. This should be their new campaign.
Oh,
get
like
Jokic and Allie.
Yeah, and they give you like free, like,
everything.
You know, they give like tacos
and
like Staples Center or whatever. You get free everything.
Yeah, just
an Oprah situation.
Yeah, it's like everyone gets a car. If Jokic
gets their student loan debt forgiven if Nikola Jokic dunks an alley-oop.
Oh, man.
Aaron Gordon is there. He can take 5 minutes to teach them.
He is a good alley catcher.
He's taking all of them. He's taking all of them.
Oh, man. This is a sad turn of events.
I know. I did not foresee us landing. Well,
he's 7 feet tall.
Of Nikola Jokic never landing, merely remaining on land.
Oh, how upset is LeBron right now watching this? Thinking he was going to get his best scorer of all time label. And now we're just talking about Denver Elliott.
We're never going to get it. Like, if you are the WWE champion, you don't also desire to be the Intercontinental champion. Like, that's beneath you at this point. You're a top shelf guy. We talk about you and Jordan. We don't talk about, like, this scoring and shooting business. That's where you are.
I will point out that LeBron James is also doing something unprecedented. He is going on his own talk show.
Yeah.
And giving content to other talk shows about himself. Like, it is. The self-alley-ooping, incidentally. He's constantly just dunking his own alley-oops, which is incredible.
When did he put out that show? Did it come out on Sunday or something?
Over the weekend.
So yeah. It came out over the weekend. He said he wants to be thought of as one of the best scorers. Presumably it was recorded before he decided to then go and score 56 points.
Well, it was dropped then. It was all part of a release. It's like a musician with a release schedule. Like, this is going to drop. Then I'm going to play on Sunday and score 56 points.
I'm going to go out on like a fake date with another celebrity just to get the press going. Like, we'll get this press swirling around me doing this. We're going to leak a couple things here and there. And then I'm going to drop an album, have a pop-up shop in New York City, you know?
I'm going to threaten to murder my ex-wife's boyfriend a very claymation, sort of like decapitated kind of artistic fashion.
This is speaking in generalities here.
This is a vintage Pablo jump pass. Get us nice and close to that line.
It's art. Kanye. I separate art from the artist.
Kanye. Mm. I think we've expended this topic.
Yes, that's correct.
I mean,
get Jokic. We do need to think of a hashtag.
Yeah, can we get a hashtag?
Oops, Jokic.
Ooh.
So on the
Oops,
Jokic
I did it for the first time.
Obviously, phenomenal player. Maybe probably the best player in the NBA at this point. He has caught alley-oop layups. That is on YouTube. In practice, he's caught an alley-oop dunk.
Yes!
In practice.
I need to see it.
Does it look normal?
No. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
It's above the rim. He dunks the ball. All right. Let's move on to some
football. I'm done for the show. I'm just looking up Jokic dunks.
Okay, please don't, because we're moving on to football.
Don't worry. It'll take him like 5 seconds.
My question is,
watch the whole
how significant is it that Aaron Rodgers has reportedly lined up trades with the Broncos, Steelers, and Titans?
So I believe it's Mike Florio who reported this, right? That there are deals that the Packers have allegedly prearranged with Aaron Rodgers' preferred trade partners, the Denver Broncos, most famously, less famously, the Titans, and also the Steelers, who have, to other reporters, privately denied that they have made such prearrangements. But the Broncos seem like the most obvious one everyone talks about. I need to know what's happening here, Kevin Clark and Dominique Foxworth. Like,
just Kevin.
Okay, yeah, still like one or two dunks left for Dominique to scout. Kevin, what's happening here? Because this is not a thing I knew of teams doing very often.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's happening in this case. So I think that I'm sure there's been conversations. I don't think there's trade packages ready to go. I mean, first of all, the Titans would face an absolute cap nightmare. Ryan Tannehill's dead cap is something over $50 million. It's not like they could just say, okay, here we go. There's rumors now that, you know, maybe there'd be a package. Charles Robinson had this with Devontae Adams. I don't think that an NFL team wants to do the NFL version of the Anthony Davis trade where they give up unimaginable picks, unimaginable capital to get assets, even if it's Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. That would be 10 years worth of picks, basically. So what I think is this makes sense from a leverage standpoint. We've talked on this show 5 times now. Now, the player empowerment era in football does not exist. Well, how can you leverage anything? How can you get any leverage whatsoever? You can announce right before the franchise tag deadline, right before free agency, that, hey, if I don't like how things are going, I might leave. So I don't think this is about going to Denver or Pittsburgh or Tennessee. I think this is about saying, I'm not committing until I see the moves that you make, Green Bay, Brian Gutekunst. And also, by the way, I want them to be my moves, okay? And you're putting pressure on the team to do what you want without saying so. It's actually genius, and it is as close to the player empowerment era as we're going to get for a star quarterback.
Well, I mean, it is the player. It is player empowerment. It's what LeBron would do all the time when he signed the 1-year deal.
Sure.
But the idea that Aaron has that level of leverage is only predicated on him being willing to sit out. If you think that these trades are not something that can realistically happen, then he has to be willing to sit. And I don't know if either that or him just being disgruntled becomes a problem with him in the locker room. So that like makes me hesitant. I believe that he is serious about wanting to leave. I don't believe that he will, but I believe he's serious about it. And I do, I don't also believe that the Packers would be unwilling to make the trade. I think right now, this is what you say. You make all this, like that's how you raise the price and that's how you take the position that the fans will love. Mm. And if Aaron leaves, it's all Aaron's fault. So I think that the most likely result is he ends up back in Green Bay. But if Aaron Rodgers wants to get traded, I think he gets traded. I think they have to trade him.
We already did this last year, and the Packers said, sounds good,
that's what
brother,
I was
see
say,
in July.
Like, So let me ask it this way, right? What is different this summer versus last summer? Of course, he has another MVP award, but his contract situation is not terribly dissimilar insofar as he doesn't have moves on paper that he is legally entitled to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference is that his contract situation is not the same as last summer. Right now, if you fully believe that he is willing to sit out a year, then you have no choice. Then you have to trade him because otherwise you get nothing from this. You enter your rebuilding process with nothing. And I guess that's what it comes down to. How realistic do they take him at his word of being willing to sit out a season? That's the final like straw. If they believe him, which I believe, like maybe I'm naive, but I think Aaron Rodgers is just kooky enough to be like, nah, I'm good.
But Kevin, like last summer, of course, right? Like Jeopardy was the job he was going to go and do. That job is no longer available to him. So is this merely like, no, I'm going to just retire and hang out? Is that now the plausible threat?
You don't think Amazon will throw Aaron Rodgers 20 a game to do games? Like, it's not like he doesn't have other options. Like Aaron Rodgers could find another job. He could find another job and find money, or he could not get a job and not get paid. He's all right. If he's angry enough at this organization, which it doesn't seem like he is anymore, but if he's as angry as we thought he was last year, then he could find a way to pull the trigger and apply the pressure and force them to make a move, in my view.
Well, that's Kevin. I was going to ask you that too, right? Like, it doesn't seem like he's as angry. That's the other big difference this offseason from last offseason. Are you a believer that he's just going to re-sign with the Packers as Dominique is? Or where are you on reading the tea leaves here?
Yeah, I mean, still under contract. He has said multiple times that Gutekunst has brought him in, GM has brought him into the decision-making process. He seems very positive. There's been a ton of optimism around that. The retirement talk has gone completely away over the past 2 weeks. Right. Remember, it was a when-I-make-a-decision kind of thing. And now it's just what team he's going to go play for. The narrative has changed almost overnight. So what that tells me is that he's decided he's going to play, but still doesn't want to fully commit because he wants to see something in free agency. I think he's been mostly positive. This is a guy who, for as passive aggressive as he's been over the past, 15 years, he's also had the ability to tell the truth in these situations. That's what he did last July when he just showed up and went scorched earth on everybody. So he's not going to suck up to Brian Gutekunst or Mark Murphy or Russ Ball or any of these guys unless he has to. And I think he feels like he's wanted now. And if Davante Adams comes back on the franchise tag, and I don't see a reason why he wouldn't, everything says he should come back.
That's the important question to me, the Davante Adams question. Because I got the feeling from Aaron's quotes prior to the end of the season was he wanted them to take care of Davante Adams.
Yes.
Nobody believes the franchise tag is taking care of a player.
I agree.
So if Aaron Rodgers is this great teammate who officiates his teammates' weddings and looks out for his guys and gets Randall Cobb a job, if he is that guy, does he not utilize his leverage to get his man, his best receiver, Davante Adams, the long-term deal that frankly would be better for their roster construction, like better than a franchise tag? The franchise tag, if anything, they use his leverage to negotiate his number down. But a franchise tag hits the cap harder than a long-term deal would.
So you're saying he's a one-man stimulus for Packers players?
He's a job creator.
He should be. Like, he could be in this case. He could if he focuses on that and if it's as important as he said he – like, I guess, Kevin, I'd be interested to hear what you think about the idea that Aaron Rodgers is going to use his leverage not just for himself but also to get his boy Davante a long-term deal. And I don't quite understand why the Packers wouldn't want to give him a long-term deal either.
That's my question.
It's expensive to do that. He's going to be demanding north of $20 million. So they just got to figure it out from a cap standpoint. That's a lot of money.
So wait, So here's the timeline for people who are unfamiliar, right? So the tag deadline is 4 p.m. tomorrow. Next Wednesday is the beginning of the new league year. Yep. Yes. So that's when these things can be officially consummated. The day before that is a Tuesday, which means that Aaron Rodgers will be talking to Pat McAfee. So these are sort of like the dominoes that are all like sort of like kind of swaying in the wind.
Speaking of one man stimulus. Not that Pat McAfee doesn't have a good show and didn't have a lot of fans prior to the Aaron Rodgers, but I'm sure that the deal that Pat signed, shout out A-Rod for making news throughout the course of the season to keep that thing top of the charts. Aaron Rodgers is as annoying as he is and passive aggressive as he is, he's good to some guys.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he also gave cover to the Jeopardy host who replaced Alex Trebek. I mean,
He gave cover to Carson Wentz, gave cover to Lamar Jackson. He gave cover to Kirk Cousins, all the quarterbacks who decided that they didn't want to get vaccinated. His antics was plenty of cover for them. A-Rod is a hero. He's a villain turned hero. He's like the reverse Batman.
He's like a Robin Hood for shit posters. Yeah.
Oh, he's a man in tights.
Mm.
I think we lost Kevin. Somebody bring some numbers out.
No.
Alabaster, can we get a stat? Bring them back. Stat.
Quarterback vaccination talk was not something I had notes on.
You didn't appreciate my comedy joke?
No, I did like it. I couldn't end it because it's quarterback vaccination.
You know, like on TV shows about doctors, they say stat because they want something fast.
See, that's...
I say
that.
I want a stat.
I will say this.
Is a good comedy joke, as Dominique called it.
Thank you. A comedy joke.
One thing I like about this is that it seems very NBA in the sense that there was a report today that no one knows what Rodgers is going to do. No one knows. It hasn't come out yet. But I think when it happens, we're going to find out this was done 2 years ago. In the same way like the Ben Simmons thing. It's like, oh yeah, that was done in September. Yeah, you didn't know about that. I kind of like the behind the scenes, this was arranged a year ago thing. That's what I'm looking forward to. If Aaron Rodgers can bring that element of the NBA into where it's just like five people just secretly running the league, I would enjoy that. And Pat McAfee's involved in that as well.
That was a very Dominique move of you to not let my flub slide. That's something I would do.
It's my background in comedy joke. Alabaster, what's your joke?
You know I made medical joke, but I went comedy joke. Stat.
Nice.
It was a good one, though.
Good one. All right, I have a question.
Don't patronize me.
Okay, Alan. Say he gets traded. What team do you want him to go to? Like, it feels like any of these teams could actually win the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
This is kind of what's fascinating, right? All of these teams that are on this list are, like, going to be harder divisionally to win a Super Bowl inside of, right?
Huh?
Dude, I mean, the Packers in the NFC North versus the Broncos.
Titans made the playoffs.
The Titans.
The Titans. Yeah.
Got but coming out of the AFC, though?
The Jaguar.
All right.
You said divisionally.
Conference-wise.
I go with conference-wise.
Conference-wise, that's good.
But let me ask you a question, Dominique, because Rodgers lived through over a decade of Mike McCarthy. Okay.
He did.
In Tennessee, he's got Todd Downing calling the plays. In Pittsburgh, he's got Matt Canada calling the plays. And he's got Matt LaFleur right now. Okay, you can make a case. Nathaniel Hackett, who's the coach of the Broncos now, was his OC, so he would have some familiarity with that, and he's obviously very comfortable with it. But with the Titans and the Steelers, like, if the whole thing is I'm in a bad situation, you're taking a huge downgrade as a play caller. Like, for all the roster talk and whatever, like, I just don't think that makes – ton of
sense. So I mean, I think that he has, this is again the conversation about player empowerment era, is we look at what Tom Brady did when he went down to Tampa Bay, and we look at what Peyton Manning did when he went out to the Broncos, and it doesn't necessarily apply for Matt Stafford necessarily, but when you are a great quarterback and you move teams, you have some leeway and some leverage in the way that things will work. They were not running a similar offense. I remember Denver quite clearly. When Peyton went there, all of a sudden they were playing like the Colts. Yep. And I imagine that Aaron Rodgers can do the same thing. If he likes something, he can implement the things that he likes. So I guess taking the pressure off, if he trusts LaFleur the way that it seems like he does, then you're right. Then going somewhere else may not be a good decision. But he can still take what he wants. And Nathaniel Hackett, to your point, like, is an extension of Matt LaFleur. And frankly, everybody runs it now. Like, this is all derivative of of Mike Shanahan and all the Shanahan system. So, like, anywhere he goes, they're running just about a version of that.
How dare you impugn John Fox and Adam Gase in Denver? You're telling me those offensive minds didn't push all the right buttons for Peyton?
The fact of the matter is Peyton's offense is simple as hell. Like, it's not like it's a bunch of stuff. It takes 30 seconds to install. It's his mind and making decisions pre-snaps that was more complicated and challenging. So, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, I think he can handle it anywhere he goes.
I mean, the Packers have more blue-chip players than those teams do. That's all. Right. I mean, it's the best situation for
them. And they're in a conference that, like – last year, they should have been in the championship game, but it seems like they back their way into the championship game no matter what every year.
And then lose.
Yeah.
And then lose. Right.
Is my internet slow or is it you guys? What's going on here?
I'm also getting that, but maybe we're just getting hacked.
Okay.
You guys ready to move on?
Sure. Why not?
All right. We will move on to another quarterback looking for a big contract. And our question is, what does it tell you that Lamar Jackson isn't engaging with the Ravens in contract negotiations?
So Lamar Jackson not engaging with the Ravens in contract negotiations is hinting towards another NBA-style possible future, right? The idea that Lamar Jackson, if he plays this year and gets his giant raise to $23 million, I believe his annual salary would be, if he did not renegotiate and merely picked up that year, got that year picked up on his last deal, on his last year of his deal, would end up being like year to year, right? He'd be in that tag zone where it's basically NBA style. You're going all in on yourself every single year. $23 million in his final season with the Ravens under contract right now. He also doesn't have an agent, right?
Right.
And that's another big part of this whole equation. So what is happening here? Because he could have renegotiated theoretically before off of Josh Allen's giant deal. He waited. He played the season out. His stock seems to have fallen some in comparison to Josh Allen, certainly. So here he is representing himself. And the Ravens are just sort of like waiting to see if he wants to do some real like negotiating right now.
Kevin?
Wait, you have a cat named Lamar and I'm starting?
Well, I didn't name the cat.
Good point.
I didn't name the cat. My son
You live with him.
Yeah, I mean, I have a cat named Lamar, so I'm an expert on Lamar Jackson contract.
You have a Lamar in your household who is very inaccessible psychologically, and you're telling me you're not the expert on
this.
Okay,
here we go. You got it. Here's some expertise. I don't know. Like, it would seem to me that Lamar Jackson, you said his stock has gone down. And I would agree that he had a season last year that was not as successful as he would have liked. But I would not agree that his stock has gone down. For much of the season, we thought of him as an MVP candidate because he was doing so much with so little. Then he got a little nicked up and things got a little out of hand. But even if that didn't happen, this team, if you think about where they were before Lamar Jackson stepped in, they were led by Joe Flacco and there was conversation about moving on from Harbaugh, who I think is one of the best coaches in football. Lamar Jackson comes in, they go on a winning streak, they make the playoffs, they lose. Following year, he wins the MVP. Like, this is what we're talking about, what this person meant to this organization. So I don't think his leverage has gone down at all, and they've built this team, offensively at least, in his image. So, like, while he may not be as valuable across the league as Josh Allen is to any team, I don't think there is any player that is more valuable than he is to his team. So I absolutely think that they pay him as much as a quarterback. They give him the Josh Allen treatment, maybe a little more, honestly.
I completely agree with you because, okay, the report is that they're getting offers, giving offers of 35, not 40.
Oh, numbers.
Just money. That's just money. When you get a contract offer from ESPN, you go, uh-oh, don't stat me down.
Oh, no, I don't. You keep getting it confused. I'm sorry. If it feels like I'm being, like, negative or mocking, I'm not. I love your numbers. I get excited about your numbers. I'll just be quiet and enjoy them to myself.
No, I like it.
I know
it.
It's
I
hard
like
to
it.
Tell what Dominique's love language is.
Yeah,
Kevin,
my love language is mockery, as Pablo has come to understand and accept.
That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, stat him down.
We've gone through 15 years, maybe more, of the next quarterback to get an extension becomes the highest paid or close to it. Mahomes put a bit of a ceiling on that with his 50 a year, 10 year deal, but Josh Allen gets over 40 a year. We're going to see more extensions over 40 a year that we don't anticipate. That's just the business. And I it was Manhattan real estate. Like, you just, everybody says, well, it's going to come down, it's going to come down. It's never coming down. It's always going up. The price is always going up. It's always going to be unreasonable. The earlier you sign, the better. What we're seeing with Lamar now is if he's not engaging, he's going to bet on himself, which is a tricky game for quarterbacks or any NFL player, because there's a franchise tag that can keep you in-house for 3 years after your contract is over. It is the most limiting thing in professional sports, in any professional sport, all over the world. There is nothing that limits a player movement more like the franchise tag, where you can just keep tagging the guy, okay? We've seen Dak Prescott use that to his advantage. We've certainly seen Kirk Cousins get to actual free agency and use that to his advantage in a fully guaranteed contract. Lamar is going to bet on himself. I think it's ridiculous if the difference between Lamar signing those extensions and someone like Josh Allen is that Lamar is more of a running back, is more prone to injury. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's unfair. Pay Lamar.
Yeah. I mean, the injury, so the third year of the franchise is, I mean, we've never seen anybody use that because it's restrictive. So, like, it's prohibitive cost-wise to your structure. So, like, realistically, you can be kept in-house for 2 years. But your point about Lamar injury, I think he is contacted more than any other quarterback. So that would suggest that maybe he is exposing himself to more injuries. But we have not really seen a correlation between quarterbacks being injured while running design runs as opposed to being injured in a pocket. You think of the big quarterback injuries, a lot of them happen with quarterbacks in the pocket where they are standing upright and not protecting themselves, also not anticipating a hit. So I'm not sure that Lamar's running is that dangerous. But I do think there's a point to be made about Lamar's style of play. Mm-hmm. Is if Josh Allen, who is a great running quarterback also, if he gets hurt, if he pulls a hamstring or tweaks his groin, his game is diminished some. But if this happens to Lamar Jackson, it is his game is diminished a lot. Like, to be fair about what he does to threaten the defense, if he cannot run, that completely changes him from an MVP caliber quarterback to, like, average, hopefully, quarterback. If he has to stay in the pocket, if he cannot threaten you with his legs at all, that really puts his accuracy, which has been a problem, frankly, it puts it under a microscope. And that's not the type of Lamar Jackson that you want.
So it's worth noting that the comments we've gotten from Lamar most recently came from The Shop, the same episode where LeBron James was feeding content to everyone. Oh. And so LeBron had Lamar Jackson say this, truly, quote, being a billionaire and being a champion are his goals. And so I guess if you're advising him, because again, he doesn't have an agent, and there have been reports that suggest you should just go and pull like five of the best quarterback agents and have them advise you as to what to do. Like, what should he do at this point? What would you guys like to see if you had a thumb on the scale of his contract?
Dominic, you've seen this before, because I've seen this before. So many quarterbacks, especially when they're on the rookie contract, say, I'm going to break the model. Russell Wilson said, I'm going to be a billionaire and own MLB or NFL team before his negotiation started. So that was right after he won the Super Bowl. They all say there's going to be a difference, and then they sign for market rate. That's just what happens. And Kirk Cousins was a different, I mean, the Washington organization was such a tire fire that they were lowballing him, and then he was offended and all that stuff. It was a little bit different, okay? But everybody, Russell Wilson hired a baseball agent because he was going to change the paradigm. And then guess what he signed?
That's right.
A football contract that was just like everybody else's. And then he stopped talking about being a billionaire on the field. He's going to do other stuff. He's doing great. He's in a very happy marriage. You're doing great, Russell.
How you know?
But you didn't change the finances of football.
Oh, I've seen them dance. Oh, okay. You can't fake that. Okay. I mean, hips don't lie in that regard.
Good.
Okay, good.
Oh, good. Great. Yeah.
Okay. I've never seen them dance.
I've seen her dance. You've seen her dance.
Well, I've seen Russell like be a prop in a in a Sierra dance.
I mean, isn't that what marriage is? Like, I mean, it's really
real talk.
A microcosm of marriage in general. We are all just props.
I was talking to Russell last summer, and
here we go. Big
he was watching the Italy Euros game in Italy.
Oh, and were you sitting next to him?
I was not. Ciara was next to him. I wasn't there. I was in Brooklyn, and I was in the East River here. And I was looking for like a joke, and I was like, hey man, like, does anyone, when you're watching these games, like, does anyone know who you are? Like, do people recognize you? And he was like, yes. And I was like, all right, cool. I wanted, because like, sometimes those guys go over there and it's like, yeah, man, I just sat in this villa watching Italian soccer. Nobody knew who I was. He was like, no, they got it.
Yeah, I mean,
no, Mr. Unlimited, that range goes across the planet.
Gosh, that's international, Mr. Worldwide.
That was a big mistake. What was this question about Lamar Jackson? Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I don't get it. I think the question itself is like the fact that he's not engaging. From what I understand, the Ravens are willing to have these negotiations and these conversations. And I believe that Lamar's mother is very active, and he also has a lawyer, I believe, involved. And frankly, the Ravens, I'm hesitant to say this, but to be careful, but like, I don't think that it benefits the Ravens to like take advantage of Lamar in this situation. Like the idea that he doesn't have an agent, I don't think is as scary as people make it seem. Mm-hmm. Because they, not that you should trust an organization or trust any company that you're working for. He has people to help him read through the contract. But I don't think if you have a franchise quarterback, maybe you jerk around a D-tackle or a linebacker. But you don't do that to a franchise quarterback. It just doesn't won't bode well for your team going forward. So I think the question is why? Like, how does this benefit them or benefit him? Because we haven't heard that they made him an offer that he doesn't appreciate. We've heard that everyone, including their head coach, say he's going to be our quarterback here forever. Yes. And he's not engaging in these conversations.
No, Alabaster, the support from the Ravens from the first game Lamar Jackson ever played seems to have been a model in how to support your quarterback. Yeah. And right now it does seem like the thing that he's chasing is that phrase, I want to be a billionaire. And that to me is just, that's, don't. I mean, just, I get wanting to be super rich. Being a billionaire is like, I want to be a super villain at this point. So that's like not maybe.
And also, if you want to be a billionaire, negotiate a football contract, 10 here, 100 there, that ain't getting you that much closer. You need to start a company or something, rob a bank or two. I don't know.
I will say, Dominique, I went house hunting with my wife yesterday, and we did not have an agent, and we got laughed out of every house. So hopefully it goes better for Lamar.
I think that he is a more attractive tenant than you are. I got
we filled out a form. We filled out a form at one of the houses, and the realtor put it in a stack. And I swear to God, at the top of the stack, it said unrepresented persons.
Wow, there's a caste system. Yeah. It's a little bottom different. Of the social ladder.
It's a little different for Lamar Jackson, though. Like, if you would have walked in there with money all over, falling out of your pockets, like, that's essentially Lamar Jackson's ability is the money that's falling out of your pockets. I'm pretty sure they would have treated you a little differently. You would have gone into another pile that said, cash upfront buyer, and you would have been fine.
Spotify has no franchise tag. I'll leave it at that.
By the way, the whole tag thing, it does, because Kevin, you are very clear in how, you know, this is an instrument that is restrictive in ways that nothing else is. It got me thinking, is there any situation where anyone is glad to be tagged, like in life? It does feel like a word we should stigmatize more often. No one wants to be tagged in anything.
Should we change it?
I wouldn't know. I mean, I've never been tagged while playing tag. Speed, don't lie.
Oh, God.
Untouchable. Undefeated Deer Park Elementary School tag champion.
When I tag you with that tranquilizer dart, see how fast you are.
I'll run faster than that dart.
Alabaster wants to tag in. What do you want?
That was not a great jump pass, but thank you. Yeah. So
I love it.
Last football question here. He's with this. Trying. It's like, okay, so it kind of seems like he does want to be franchise tagged twice so that he can be a free agent when he's 27. Which would be sort of, as you said earlier, like the LeBron of all of this, 27-year-old former MVP quarterback with like, you know, an 8 to 10 year window of being a superstar to follow. One, is there any chance this backfires? And two, what does an NFL free agency look like with a 27-year-old MVP quarterback available to sign with any team? Does that change like everything?
That's the paradigm shift that everyone's talking about. If you can get to that point, I think a quarterback who does that does then, I think, change the leverage, because we don't believe it's something that can happen because we haven't seen it happen. Because, frankly, it's the first word that came to my mind is not a good one. It's stupid. But to be honest with you, it's risky is probably a more accurate thing to say. It's a little too risky in a game like this to mess around and try to get to free agency. But if you want to be a billionaire, you're going to have to do something a lot more than that. I was thinking maybe that's the first step, but nah, that ain't enough.
The first step, $200 million is a pretty good step towards becoming a billionaire. That's a lot better.
But so is $150. I
mean, it's the same step. We're all rowing in the same direction. It's the same step.
Kevin, you wouldn't get it as an unrepresented person.
So there's a salary cap, there's a franchise tag, but there's one thing there isn't in football. There's no max contract.
Right.
Okay? And we're about to find out if that happened, what the limits, what the effective max contract is in football. I would say it's risky, but not for the reasons you're outlining. I think everybody, I mean, there's a track record now of guys getting hurt, missing 13 games and still getting around what their market value was. That's been established. There's too many desperate teams, too many desperate owners, especially the quarterback position. But I think that's risky because Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome have done an amazing job building that team. And you go into a place that doesn't understand how to build around him. You go into the line is worse, the defense is worse, the infrastructure is worse. They were amazing in that MVP year and understanding what to do with him and how to unlock him. They were amazing in empowering him and saying, let's go for it on fourth down because we have Lamar Jackson. Okay, you go to Miami, or I was going to say Jacksonville, but they have a quarterback. You know, some of these desperate teams in 3 or 4 years who are going to say, an owner, Carolina is a great example. You don't want to go to Carolina right now. You don't want to go to Carolina ever. You want to play for Matt Rhule for $60 million a year? Yeah. You'll be a billionaire, but you will be a very unhappy billionaire.
I mean,
to be fair, I think most of billionaires are generally unhappy.
We're focused on the wrong
part. The owner of the Panthers, incidentally, yes.
We're focused on the wrong part, though. I think your point is maybe it gets you incrementally closer to being a billionaire, but it gets you a long way further from being a champion, which I think is probably more important to him, I'm guessing.
And the more Ravens, realistic.
Yeah, it's more realistic.
About a universe.
And more, because he's going to have a second career. Like, he's going to have a second career that's better than his first one, I think, to get to a billion.
I just figured it out. I just figured out the path to billionaire. He goes to a Miami. He goes to a Carolina, a Steve Ross, a David Tepper, and he steals their money. He just scams them. He just becomes a Jack Easterby.
A crypto scam.
He gets in. It's a crypto thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He just gets in. And
no,
it's like,
not even. You just sneak into the office when they're not looking, and you just like get into their email and like send yourself some stuff.
Yeah, might be like, can I borrow $3 billion? And then they're like, sure. And then they're going to be too embarrassed to ask for it back.
Yeah. Everybody knows amongst billionaires, you never ask to repay a loan. That's like, that would be admitting that you need it, and you can never do that.
What's the old thing? If you give somebody money, assume it's a gift, right?
Yeah.
Lamar?
Mm.
David Tepper is waiting for your call. That's all I'll say.
Oh man, this is weird.
All right, does David Tepper still have those bronze testicles on his desk?
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Billionaire stuff, guys. Super relatable.
All right, let's move on. We are going to play Whodunit, the game where we give you a quote.
Oh,
tell us who done it.
Who's stealing my biceps?
Oh. Yeah. Very good.
Goodness gracious.
Did you shrink? Whose body is that?
That's
my
your body.
Body.
Of course, that's your body.
Tell
it's Scrawny Rob Lowe.
Oh, yeah.
All right, first quote.
Touché.
No, please, no, please. Everyone be quiet. Let me just say, today was unacceptable. And your choices are Patrick Ewing, Jim Boeheim, Coach K, or Jorge Masvidal.
We need to watch this video to show you how good Alabaster's impression was. Please play it.
You didn't pick, though.
Well, we gotta, I mean, come on. We know who it is.
Yes.
Please roll the video.
I'm sorry about this afternoon. That, no, please, no, please, everyone be quiet. Let me just say, it's unacceptable. Today was unacceptable.
I love it when you try to give the Independence Day speech after the aliens have blown up your planet.
What was that supposed to be? Like, best case scenario, what was that going to be? Coach K addressing the crowd after a win, like at the micro, doing the Wolf of Wall Street thing?
No, this is impromptu, unplanned. This was, I believe this was something that he personally engineered because they had just gotten blown out. And yes, his last home game ever at Cameron, 94-81. Yes?
This was not, okay, this needs to be the future. Like, if there's a particularly bad loss, coaches need to go to the middle of the court and address fans like this.
I'm sorry to be cynical, but I got a question for what's going on in his head in this moment. It's like, all right, everyone understands what this moment is about. Like, is he thinking this is how I want to be remembered? Is he genuinely feeling like this is unacceptable? Or is he like, no, this is my moment. I'm going to let them know that I care about winning till the end. Like, what percentage of this is theatrics and which percentage of it is like real legitimate? He's actually disappointed.
Oh, no, this is a clear clinic. in. And Dominique, you should be able to actually relate to this as an unhinged competitor. Like, when you get dropped an L that big on your lap, you can't just go out on that. You got to hit a shot before you leave the court, right? Well, this is his attempt to, this is his Obama, like, I'm just going to take 20 of these. One of them's going to go in, and nobody in this crowd's going to get mad at me.
I mean, I guess he will, like, this isn't his last game. It's his last game in Cameron. So, like, his idea is, I'm going to get my players' attention, and then we're going to win the championship, and that'll be my last game. Right?
Yeah. Well, he's trying to, Kevin, I believe he's trying to sort of foretell the hype video in which this is like the turning point.
That's what I was going to say. And in 5 years, if it doesn't, if they go out in the second round, no one's going to remember this. It's just going to be like a weird little footnote. But there's a huge upside to it, which is he shushed the Cameron crowd on a night all about him because he just wanted to get his guys ready to go.
So when he loses in the second round, is he going to go to like the neutral site in the middle of the floor? Yeah. It's like, no, guys. This is unacceptable. Yeah, stop
it. Thing. He revolutionized sports in the last month on the job, and now he's just going to do it. He's going to give a little State of the Union after every game in the middle of the court. It's like an audience talk back after a play.
Yes.
Speaking of unacceptable, Patrick Ewing, it's really unacceptable what's happening in Georgetown.
What's going on? He lost 20 straight games?
Unacceptable.
And got
is that
an extension.
Really what's happened?
He's lost 20 straight games. It's like the Jokic alley-oop thing. It just you think you'd kind of wander into one at some point.
I wouldn't normally, even though I'm minutes away from Georgetown, I wouldn't pay attention to a basketball team this bad. But my sister-in-law went to Georgetown, and she actually keeps up with them. Mm. And I only pay attention just to send her mean tweets or texts.
Well, that's important.
Yeah, of course. That's called family. It's called love, as we established earlier, Kevin. That's how I love.
Correct. Alabaster, I assume you enjoyed this. I assume you enjoyed everything about this game at Duke.
This was a delight. I was, you know, if this had been a couple years ago, we wouldn't have gotten a speech to the crowd. We would have allegedly maybe gotten a back injury. But you know what? The speech to the crowd was nice. All right, let's move on. We will go on to a game of What Are the Chances? One topic left because you guys have filled it up. And this is a legitimate question. This is a real sports question that I was wondering all weekend. What are the chances Jordan Davis had the best combine performance you've ever seen?
Oh, boy. So Kevin, you were in Indy. Yeah, you were in Indy for some of this.
Yeah.
What do we need to know about what this very large person from the University of Georgia did?
Here's what you need to know about Indy. NFL people drink a ton. That's what you need to know. There's a lot of drinking that goes on there. And there's probably some GMs who don't know who Jordan Davis is yet because they're somewhere on the JW Marriott floor still going. Okay, so I think it's like 85%. Like, I'm pretty sure it's near the top. There's some absolute, you know, there's legendary stories, Dominic, you know this, about, you know, Calvin Johnson's numbers coming in. And everybody going, oh my, all the NFL guys going, oh my God, this is amazing. Or Dominic Foxworth's numbers coming in. And everybody's saying, look at this.
I like the sound that you made.
Yeah, I mean, that's how GMs talk. You know that. Just sort of grunting from side to side.
Yeah, just a vaguely aroused grunt of manliness.
Oh, it's pretty weird. I remember when I first started getting recruited, it was uncomfortable, like for colleges, because a coach came to my house came to a practice, and I'm working out. He's standing next to my dad, and I come off the field, and he's talking about me as a player to my dad, and he said, he's got really great hips. And my dad liked football, but he wasn't into scouting at the time and was very confused and remember pulling me talking to me on the drive home later. It was like, yeah, I mean, Duke seemed like a good school, but he was awfully focused on your hips. Like, what is that? And I had to explain to my dad that, like, he's talking about movement, athleticism, fluidity.
Oh, gotta flip those hips.
But yeah, if you listen to scouts talk about players, it gets pretty erotic. It's the words, the terminology, and then the grunts.
Pablo, do you know I sat next to my mom and I sat next to Dominique's parents at a Florida State game? Like, 20.
Yep.
How did you guys piece this together?
What do you mean? Because he was a famous football player. It wasn't him being like, hey, were you in the Maryland section at the Florida State game? It was more like,
sorry,
it's going to be noted if I'm sitting next to Dominique's Foxworth parents because people were coming up. I think it was 2003, so you're having a great year. And people were coming up to the Foxworths and saying, heck of a job raising a future NFL player and a contributor to Maryland.
And it he wasn't is like an he was aspiring looking back sports and saying, writer.
There's someone, he... someone who has a lot of media potential sitting next to my parents, and I'm going to take note of
that. Sorry, Dominique, I forgot. I forgot. Despite Dominique telling us a story about how people make erotic noises about him, he was a guy who hired people to make erotic noises about him for a long time.
I don't know. 341 pounds. Let's give it 341%.
Wow.
It is crazy. Can we get that card also after you write this in, 341? Just like the numbers, the raw metrics here, Alabaster.
Yeah, can we because watch him run for a second? We have
yeah,
the
can we just like...
We have all of this for you.
Here he goes.
Hey, that's a big man moving.
It is.
Sheesh.
Yo, Jordan Davis on the vertex.
Ooh.
Hang on, hang on. Oh, what a finish.
That part I can do.
That's a big jump.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. I get it. I'm going to go put in 10.75% though.
What and is... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm going to say that because the most impressive combine performance that nobody talks about is the one that I got an email about from Ryan Fitzpatrick over the weekend.
Oh, God.
Ryan Fitzpatrick was agitated that in ESPN.com's rankings of giant hands, he was not listed because he has 10.75 inches worth of hand span. And no one acknowledges that those are the largest hands in the NFL.
Who gives?
Ryan Fitzpatrick,
who cares?
I am here. I am here to be your audience. Thank you.
This was such a terrible turn.
Hold on. 10.75 across is bigger than anyone in the league.
So he's,
and we don't talk about this.
He's 341 pounds, and he ran what tight ends run, essentially. Like, fast tight ends, too. Like, that is incredible. I don't know what his agility numbers are, because maybe he's out of position. Like, he could – I mean, receivers. There are some receivers who run, like, 4.7.
Not a defensive – or a corner.
Yeah.
Just jam the guy at the line.
I mean, he could get off a press pretty easily. Like, I think that he could be a red zone threat. That's all I'm saying.
Positional position. Flexibility.
And if you line him up like 13 yards deep and let him get a good running head start, who's standing in front of him? Like, who wants to tackle that?
Where would you draft him?
Number one overall.
Really?
No.
Oh.
I don't know. I haven't given it much thought.
Like, wait, yeah, Kevin, can you give us an actual projection for where Jordan Davis is?
So you got in. So
there
were concerns. There were concerns. People didn't really understand the Georgia defense. They thought snap counts were a little bit low on some of the guys. And he answered all those questions. He lost weight coming into this. That was part of it.
Yeah.
He locked up 15, top 15, locked it up. That was what most people were saying. I think he's going to rise to be 10th, 9th, something like that.
So follow-up question. Who was the prom king of the Indianapolis Combine? Who is the person who won the weekend or the week, as it were?
One.
Like, who's the king?
I got one. It's the guy who everybody was laughing at the beginning of it and then who got millions of dollars in the middle of it, Cliff Kingsbury. Everybody at the beginning of the Combine was like, what the hell is going on in Arizona? And then I'm walking down the hall and somebody was like, dude, Cliff Kingsbury just got an extension. And I was okay. And then everybody was like, what on earth? Like, you can't be mad at it. It's peak performance.
What do we know how mad Kyler Murray is as a result of this, by the way? Because that's the story here, right? That Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim both got long extensions. Kyler Murray has not talked to Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury, meanwhile, is accepting, yes, flowers as the prom king in Indianapolis in the meantime.
I don't know. It can't help. Could you imagine?
Aaron Donald ran a 4.68.
Are you looking at? You got numbers in front of you? Are you statting us down?
Are you statting us down right now?
I'm sorry,
Dominique.
I apologize. I did not mean to stat you down. I just was wondering. Like, it's just an incredible number. 4.68 is pretty fast.
I mean, this is the follow up question to that. I guess is like how much of this actually does matter, right?
A lot.
You know. Well, it matters to draft position and also the other aspect. It's like the actual NFL performance. And are those linked, Kevin?
So they're linked in for certain positions. Defensive line, you need the explosion. That would come with the jumping. I'm a big jumping fan.
Yeah, jumping's important. The 10.
The 10, sure.
Nikola Jokic disagrees.
So like, linemen on both sides need a certain amount of athleticism. Wide receivers, if it's your thing, you need to at least be able to jump a little bit. But there's guys like Miles Boykin who can jump out of the building, and it never actually mattered. So it's just certain positions where if athleticism is your thing, you need to be able to show that athleticism. It doesn't matter for quarterbacks necessarily. Certain running backs it matters for. It's a case-by-case thing, but you can't be an unathletic defensive lineman unless you're huge and your plan is just stand there, which is a career for some people.
I don't think – I mean, it's less and less so in the modern NFL, but I don't think that the combine numbers – to me, at least, they feel like they're there to like reaffirm things that people already believe.
Yes.
Most of the time, it's like, I think this guy is fast, and he shows up the combine and he runs pretty good. Fact of the matter is, your tape is what matters most, and that's what's going to get people's attention. There's plenty of guys who go and blow up the combine and then still only go in the third round. I don't know if I can think of any off the top of my head, but it happens.
I have
a theory that so every scout is always like, we'll just see how he runs. Like, we'll see how he runs. Like, in December, like, we'll see how he runs at the combine. I think that's a stall tactic because they don't want to work. And so they're just like, let's just put this off for 3 months.
I like it.
And that's
also,
it's
a great point because we have, like, in the NBA, there's, like, Israeli missile defense technology that is clocking the speeds of every object on the floor. You're telling me that you can't just see how fast the guy is off a game tape?
That was,
point.
To be clear, the Israeli missile defense technology was not a joke. The technology. I just wanted to make it clear.
I was at Sloan. Big Raytheon vibes at Sloan. It was just sort of like, we're going to use this to do what? To just figure out assist rate. Interesting.
I have a Raytheon story. Do we have time for it?
I'm always here for private contractor, military industrial complex.
I went to a Patriots game after I was out of the league and sat in Robert Kraft's box next to executive from Raytheon, and he said that there was it's a lot of crazy technology that he is not authorized to tell me about, but what he can tell me is that because I was intrigued and I was asking him questions about, like, so what's the craziest thing? What's the most impressive thing that your technology can do? And he was like, there's a radar system that we have that I can tell you what direction a baseball is spinning as it leaves San Francisco, the Giants park. He's like, I can tell you with the radar system, the spin of a ball being hit into McCovey Cove. And I was like, all right, I'm leaving.
That's what Raytheon can give us.
I mean, that was the one that he said was unclassified that he could share.
And then he muttered some stuff about fomenting revolution in the third world.
I once met a guy like that, and he told me that a shockingly high percentage of storefronts in Manhattan are CIA fronts.
Oh yeah, I would not be surprised. So that's a good revelation, because I thought that they were like mob fronts. Like, I always assumed Soho, and there was a chess piece store. They just sold chess pieces.
No,
and
brother,
I was like, you paying these Manhattan rents?
That's a CIA front. That's a CIA front pretending to be a mob front.
And for the record, those 15 nail salons in Chinatown that are back to back to back to back to back, they are definitely all real.
The South Street Seaport is a CIA front.
You work for the CIA?
I mean, if one of us on this panel works for the CIA, it's absolutely Kevin Clark.
No way. No way. It's too obvious.
I'm going to end up in this river back here.
Stack me down. Stack me down. Stack me down.
Nikola Jokic.
Stack me down.